Hi guys, my name is Andrew Davidson with AsPerMyAbility.com. During the 1840s, Americans viewed the Wild West as a land of unending opportunities. In 1845, editor John L. O'Sullivan surmised American insular expansionism with two horrible and ultimately tragic words: manifest destiny. During this time, the territory currently known as Texas belongs to the Republic of Mexico. After two failed attempts to purchase the land from the Mexican president, Antonio López de Santa Anna, increasingly generous offers made both by President Tyler, then President Polk, the land grew chaotic and violent. O'Sullivan's manifest destiny created the ideology that Americans possessed a God-given right and duty to conquer and settle Western land. With a firm belief in manifest destiny, American filibusters brought violence, brutality, and war to not only the Mexican army, but native tribes who called the West their home. Even though American President Tyler held anti-war sentiments in the South, a pattern of cyclical violence led to the Texas Revolution. During the second half of the war, the Manifest Destiny movement reached a climax. Southern citizens, critical of the All Mexico movement, which sought to extend citizenship to colored and mixed races, ran counter to the Southwestern instinct fueled by Manifest Destiny. The breaking point of American opinion occurred from February 23rd to March 6th, 1836, at a little place called the Alamo. The events at the Alamo swayed American belief of an all-inclusive landmass the Republic of Mexico previously issued. Originally built as a Spanish mission, Mission San Antonio de Valero, time and constant changing of possessions left the Alamo disheveled and in disrepair. At the midpoint of the Texas Revolution, the mission, occupied by a combined total of 260 Texans and Tejanos, Hispanic residents who fought in the Chicano-American militia, endured a bloody 13-day attack. The attack, led by General Antonio López de Santa Anna of the Mexican Republic, resulted in a bloodbath for those at the Alamo. Santa Anna gave an order of no quarter, meaning to take no prisoners, to his Mexican troops. Eventually, Santa Anna and his men overran the mission and slaughtered each and every single soul. The battle at the Alamo sparked a no-tolerance sentiment within the American public. Even though it was the failure of American officials to effectively enforce the nation's neutrality obligation during the Texas Uprising, still, Americans were outraged. The American public sentiment cultivated an overwhelmingly hostile opinion of Mexico and began to favor and even support the once undesirable Texan filibusters. The events at the Alamo sparked unity among American opinion, thereby coining the term, "Remember the Alamo." Growing up, one of my favorite Western films was 1993's Tombstone. Tombstone is about vengeance, the savagery that comes with lawlessness, the uncanny bond between beloved family and friends, disease, grief, and how revenge, no matter what the reason, comes at a cost. Set in 1880, the film's story loosely follows troubling events in Tombstone, Arizona. Wow, what an unfortunate name for a town. Seriously, what were people thinking?
Well, the town is overrun with tombstones, so that's what we're going to call it. Surely the town's bleak name won't hurt population growth and tourism, am I right?
Bizarre. I guess it's no more bizarre than naming your food establishment Sickies, or using the word sperm to name anything other than what it's meant for. Sorry, sperm whale. As a kid, I appreciated the tenuous relationship between Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. Earp, a lawman, and Holliday, a sick and dying career criminal, develop a unique bond of friendship, my first taste of an on-screen bromance. Now, say what you want about Val Kilmer. However, his performance as Doc Holliday is absolutely astounding, and there will be no convincing me otherwise. Born as John Henry Holliday, he earned his reputation as Doc Holliday by becoming a dentist. Although I'm not sure exactly what constitutes one being an actual dentist in the 1800s, other than renting a broom closet and posting a sign that reads dentist. So, you know, I guess Holliday was a dentist for a while. More notably, Holliday was a legendary gambler and gunfighter. After being diagnosed with consumption, pulmonary tuberculosis, a nasty and fatal infection, causing massive weight loss as it spreads throughout the body's organs, Holliday moved to the untamed West for the dry air and a bit of adventure. Holliday suffered from deep alcoholism and addiction to laudanum, which is a strong mixture of opium powder and alcohol. Yumma dum dum, right? At the time, laudanum had profound medical purposes. To me, it sounds like a one-way street towards suffering a heart attack or ending up in a coma. In a sad sense, even after hundreds of years, the American opioid epidemic illustrates how little we've come. Anyway, in an attempt to slow down the progression, Holliday relocated to Tombstone, where he spent the final years of his life befriending the Earp family and becoming quite the moderately successful card player. He died at the age of 36. Wyatt Earp gained his reputation as deputy sheriff in Pima County. However, he gave up the life of the law, relocated his family to Tombstone, Arizona, and established a family business. Through a series of unfortunate events, he begrudgingly accepted the position of deputy town marshal of Tombstone. Wyatt Earp was no pushover and no joke. Historians such as Tom Clavin refer to Earp as the Old West's deadliest gunman of his day. At 3 o'clock p.m. on October 26, 1881, a 30-second shootout occurred at the OK Corral, located in Tombstone. Tensions had long been brewing between the aforementioned individuals and a group of infamous outlaws known as the Cowboys. Although brief, the gunfight at the OK Corral grew in the annals of history as symbolic. Nothing immediate came from the shootout. In fact, the gunfight only resulted in perpetuating the feud further. However, more important to our story, it represented how good-hearted people, for the betterment of the town, refused to capitulate to the tyranny of criminal gangs. The gunfight inspired people to take a stand against violence and crime. It was like your local neighborhood watch, but with guns. Lots and lots of guns. A post-World War II America saw a dramatic increase in romantic Western narratives. During the 1950s, Hollywood strongly embraced the romantic Western narrative and character tropes. In his book, History of the Western Movement, Frederick Merck writes, "Many Westerns benefited from and contributed to the romantic West of the time, which presented the Old West as a dangerous place filled with roaming gangs of savage Indians and ruthless Mexican gunslingers, but also one of white noble heroes with clear-cut American values." Popular films such as The Gunfighter, 1950, Hondo, 1953, Shane, 1953, and Rio Bravo, 1959, centered on white male protagonists who face and overcome challenges based on their strict moral code. Actor John Wayne's popularity drove the American audience to the movies. Merck writes that Wayne's rugged masculinity combined with John Ford's riveting action sequences created movies that elevated the Western from B-movie status to a classic popular Hollywood genre in its own right. Typically, the romantic Western focused on the protagonist saving a beautiful white woman from the evils of the antagonist, usually an ethnic character of some sort, or liberating a small town from the horrors of native savages or terrorizing Mexican gangs. In 1985, the anti-Western or Western revisionism movement infiltrated American culture. The Western revisionism movement focused on a historical interpretation of the American West, a cruel and lawless place, filled with rape, abuse, alcoholism, violence, poverty, disease, death, where immorality didn't fear to tread, and the line between good guys and bad guys blurred into non-existence. These narratives revealed more than just characters with a bit of dirt under their fingernails, but the history that contributed to decadence and the decay of decency. How people struggled, suffered, even died in the blink of an eye. These revisionist stories didn't take sides. Instead, they illustrated the way in which life in the American West can turn on a dime. Seth MacFarlane, creator and voice actor in the hit animated show Family Guy, stars in a film that desperately attempts to illustrate, while making light of, how dreadful things were for people during Manifest Destiny and the American West. MacFarlane's film, A Million Ways to Die in the West, is absolutely terrible, and therefore I cannot recommend it, like, at all. Usually in my history and game series, every now and then, I tend to illustrate my point through the use of film or television. Now, while there are plenty of films that fill Western revisionist shoes, I've already mentioned one of them, I've decided to switch things up by focusing on a novel. Okay, I can hear those groans. Don't fret. I'll be brief, prove my point, and move on to my game review. Scout's Honor. First published in 1985, Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian and Evening Redness in the West follows the story of a nameless protagonist as he travels between groups of good guys, bad guys, towns and villages, and often forced to endure and suffer traumatic events. McCarthy writes a protagonist that is blowing in the proverbial wind, a slave to the ways of the universe, stuck in the middle of free will and any sense of hard determinism. While most novels center around how its protagonist changes, Blood Meridian does the opposite. It shows how the nameless character degenerates due to all the violence and unspeakable behavior performed by white men, Mexicans, and natives. He withdraws from identity formulation, hence being a character without a name, only in the end, when the novel inserts a time gap and the protagonist is grown up, do we see how the character becomes hardened, possessing a better understanding of his past and embracing the meaninglessness of his life? Does he actually become the unique voice within the narrative? Only to be shot dead while crapping in an outhouse by the bad guy. The end. Roll the credits. Okay, I get it. What a supermassive bummer of an ending, right? I thought so too, until I allowed myself to focus on the theme of Blood Meridian and the significance of the nameless character's journey. Then, and only then, did I fully realize that McCarthy couldn't have ended Blood Meridian any other way. While not a stereotypical climactic ending, it remains true to the deeper theme. In fact, it's kind of brilliant. It's hard to describe. My words fail me, but it works. Blood Meridian remains one of the first and highly popular Western revisionist pieces of literature on bookshelves. And while there are plenty of historic facts, names, and places within the novel, McCarthy spent years of his life researching and scouting locations, the overall story is indeed fiction. But it's fiction with a modern and brave new purpose: to tear down the long-time, soft and gooey romantic idealism Americans have with the West. Published in 2018 by Colossal Games, Western Legends is a 2-to-6-player sandbox board game experience. In Western Legends, players work against each other by assuming the role of an iconic figure during the time of the West. Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, Johnny Ringo, Wild Bill Hickok, and Jesse James, just to name a few. The goal of Western Legends is to collect as many legendary points as possible, or LPs. The beauty of the game is how the gameplay affords players a multitude of opportunities to gain LPs. As far as my knowledge, the term sandbox is lifted from the world of video games. According to Reddit user John Tiller, sandbox video games date back to 2012. These games lack in providing player instruction towards achieving a set of objectives. Rather, the game gives players the tools to craft their own style of gameplay preferences through an engaging theme and by encouraging player imagination. Western Legends is a sandbox experience where the game drops your chosen character onto the map and affords you the autonomy to decide, with a bit of imagination, how you want your character to behave. You can become a paid marshal and go after bandits or other wanted players. You can become a wanted criminal by robbing the bank or stealing cattle. You can experience encounters as you travel in between towns. You can upgrade your gear and mount at the general store. You can ride into town and play poker all night. You can go prospecting in the mines and get filthy rich. With the Anti-Up expansion, you can hop a train and travel to an entirely different town on a different board. The point is that everything you choose to do in Western Legends yields LPs in some form or another. This sense of complete and total freedom is a breath of fresh air. Better yet, you're never completely committed to whatever you choose. If you start as a marshal for the extra cash, you can always rob a bank for even more. You'll lose your position as a marshal and become a wanted man, but hey, the possibility is there. Getting bored toiling away for gold in the mine? No worries, you can always get a job rustling cattle, or develop your natural talent at playing cards. Western Legends is absolutely stellar at asking its players, okay, what do you feel like doing now? And no matter what your response is, your choice will offer a chance at gaining LPs. Even more to the point, outside of the whole sandbox experience, Western Legends stands on two sturdy legs of gameplay. What a player does on their turn, how they spend their money, how they manage their hand, gives players a bite-sized chunk of strategy and provokes forward thinking. But the game experience never feels bogged down with complex rules, turn sequences, or bookkeeping. At the start of a player's turn, they choose to either gain 20 bucks, draw two cards, or gain 10 bucks and draw a card. That's it. You're off and running. And, of course, there's always player interaction. Players can fight each other, rob each other, play poker against each other. The whole gosh darn experience provides a perfect balance of player autonomy and yet a tight enough board that encourages interaction and alliances. You may have a table of players running wild, wreaking havoc, and causing chaos. You may rob a bank and become a criminal, while your significant other dons the badge and devotes their turns to hunting you down and bringing you in, dead or alive. Win or lose, Western Legends is a fun and satisfying experience. With four expansions for the base game, Anti-Up, A Fistful of Extras, The Good, The Bad, and The Handsome, and Blood Money, that add a connecting board along with more legendary characters, more gear to purchase, new opportunities for LPs, the game has plenty of opportunities for new, fresh, and engaging gameplay. However, if you're not one much for expansions, because those gamers exist, trust me, the base game is jam-packed with replayability. Due to character selection, weapon variation, and sandbox gameplay, I cannot find any negative considerations. I've played Western Legends with new gamers that couldn't care less about the history or Western theme, and to this day, I still receive text messages begging to play, quote-unquote, that Western game again. Well, Pilgrim, what else can I say? Rather than blather on and on and on, which comes easily to me when talking about such an exciting game, I'm taking a bit of Western advice. Doc Holliday once said, "There is no normal life. There's just life. So get on with it, okay?" My name is Andrew Davidson. I hope I have given you something to think about.